Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 29, 2019. An official with Northern Leech State says there's been another deadly cattle raid.
So we don't go to those far ends. But when the incident happened, usually the government had to send a deployment immediately to go and make sure to block all the links that they think that the cattle have been taken or where others who are intending to go and steal can be blocked.
And the military junta in Sudan wants rebel leader Yasir Arman to leave the country.
I'm a Sudanese now. They're asking me to go out. I have no anywhere to go out. I'm from this soil of the Sudan, and I will stick with our people who are aspiring for democracy, equal citizenship, social justice.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The information minister of Northern Leech State says cattle raiders suspected of coming from Twitch State attacked pastoralists in his state over the weekend and killed a known number of people and stole about 1,000 head of cattle. Lam Tungwar blames authorities in Twitch State for not arresting the raiders. He says pastoralists whose cattle were stolen in Northern Leech State carried out a revenge attack on cattle camps in Twitch State on Tuesday.
On the 26th, cattle raiders from Twitch State, which are heavily harmed, came to Northern Leech State using as a grazing land and you know, took some of the cattle, more than 1,000 and above, and also injured a couple of other people and even killed some individuals and walked away with the cattle. On that process, we were in communication with the governor of Twitch State to know there are people who actually stolen cattle from Northern Twitch State and have been waiting in the bordering area of Twitch and Northern Leech. They have to apprehend those people. They have to actually capture them and take the cattle back so that they are given to the rightful owners.
What are the officials in the two states really doing to make sure this issue of cattle raiding is put to rest? This has been happening in time immemorial.
Well, you know, as you follow up the whole situation, we have been holding multiple meetings since 2017. There was Kwajok resolution, and there was Mankin peace agreement, and there was Ajakwaj, and there was Wundrok. There was other places that actually we had a meeting as a Northern Corridor Bloc to make sure that the issue of the cattle raiding must be put to an end.
Why did you not prevent the cattle keepers from Northern Leech from crossing over to go and attack the group that stole their cattle? Why didn't you stop them?
Because we're not managing cattle, we're managing people, Tanzania. So we don't go to those far ends. But when the incident happened, usually the government had to send a deployment immediately to go and make sure to block all the links that they think that the cattle have been taken or where others who are intending to go and steal can be blocked. Now, that is where the problem actually started. We knew that these people, their cattle were taken, and we informed the government on the other side to make sure that they go and block those cattle without passing into the Twitch State. So, because that government failed to block them from apprehending them when they stolen the cattle from Northern Leech, those people enter into the Twitch State with all the people that their cattle were stolen. Do you get my point? So we are not able to definitely arrest or block these people, since we do not agree with them and we don't even know them.
I've seen pictures of pastoralists in cattle camps with very sophisticated hardware, military hardware, including PKMs and automatic rifle. Who is arming these cattle keepers?
Well, as a matter of fact, that could be information that I'm not aware about that, because as a matter of fact, it is in the constitution of South Sudan. A small arm or even the big arms are not supposed to be in the hand of civil population or civilians. This is because to protect other people and to protect themselves, you know, you could not allow guns to be in the hand of civilians. Yes, it's because of their protection. It's
only but their guns, Honorable Lam Tungwar, in the hands of cattle keepers all over South Sudan.
No,
the pastoralists are armed.
That's not true. I cannot accept that, because that is not an official. If you have seen anybody holding PKLM, that is an illegal weapon that it's supposed to be reported to the government.
It's also my understanding that these cattle camps belong to very senior government officials. Is that right?
No, I cannot confirm that. But it is traditionally, all of us own cattle, including you yourself, Sanza. I'm sure you have two or three somewhere.
Where I come from, we don't keep cattle. So it is you who has cattle camps, and it is in your area that cattle keepers are armed and they are causing insecurity. All you are saying is that you want disarmament. For how long are you going to be singing the song of disarmament when people are dying?
I am denying that in the full context of it. I'm saying that myself, as long to what I have cattle myself, my family are brought up with cattle. That is what we live for. And maybe a few cultivation here and there. But it doesn't mean that those cattle we own are actually being brought from some other people and innocently killed. We don't do that. We don't encourage that.
Why can't you, as a government, act to prevent this from happening in future? These cattle camps are all in the areas where you are. You see the cattle keepers every day, armed. Why can't you remove guns from their hands?
If you disarm one state and you leave the other state, the other state that you are disarming will actually take this gun to the other state, and tomorrow they will come back to this same state. What we need to do a joint disarmament that is the same time done. In simultaneously, it has to be done at the same time in all that are really cattle headers are too much guns and everything, they need to be done all together. And what we are planning now is how will it be done? From greater unity, greater warab, greater leg, how do we disarm, including greater will, and if possible, even a greater war must be disarmed altogether. But they have to happen at the same time.
That's Alam Tungwar, Information Minister in Northern Leech State. He was speaking with me from Bantu earlier today. An eyewitness in Twitch State says armed men from Northern Leech State killed more than 20 people and stole cattle. But Marwak Awer says he could not identify the attackers who raided a village in Twitch State this week.
Yes, of course, I'm in Twitch State, but what I witnessed is that there is a fire which taking place the day before yesterday.
Yes.
That's what I've witnessed.
How did it start?
In fact, we cannot recognize the people. In fact, but people were coming from the bulwarks to Twitch State, but we cannot recognize who are those human beings that coming to attack people in Twitch.
Since you were on the ground when the fighting was taking place, how many people died in the attack?
Approximately, it is around 20-something dead body that we found because people were running. And the report that I received from the people who were coming from the where fighting takes place, they are just saying that around 20 people, they have seen 20 people down.
Could you tell us the exact location of the cattle camp where the attack took place?
Yes, in fact, this place, it is by name Kemarola Mill. This is where people did come and fight. This is where they attack people.
You are telling me that you don't know the identities of these people, but do you know why the fight started?
Yes, because these people are coming from what I mentioned earlier, that because people they come and just, you know, come and attack the people. Because people whom they attack, they take them in a place called Marala Mill. And they were coming, in fact, those people, that because there are people who have been dead, and from those who attacked and those who found. But automatically, we found that the leadership that was put on, we recognized these are the people from where, anyway.
Oh, I was also speaking with authorities in Northern Leech State. They are saying that people from Twitch attacked a cattle camp in Northern Leech, and this was a revenge attack.
No.
Do you know about that?
That one is wrong. That's wrong. In my present year, what I have witnessed, they come even to the near where I would be living, there were people who coming. People were running, take the cow, shoot people, and even one of my brother was killed the people just coming, not those of you gone. The some who came and took the cow and killed people and gone back.
Are there government soldiers in the area where you are?
Of course, they were wearing a uniform. Those who come, they were wearing a uniform. I cannot recognize based on the statement that have been put. They were wearing the black. They were wearing the black shirt that they are put on, and I can exactly recognize where this was from. But they were just wearing the black one, the black shirt that they were wearing.
And what about the police and the national security and SPLA in the area? What are they doing to protect people?
In fact, the people were not aware because they come. Suddenly, they find people were getting nothing that people were knowing it, but they just come in. What if you let that sound the gun anyway? Because people who are not having intention of that, there's something coming. What we people had is just the gun, but after all, they kill people and they take the cow and when. This is where the organized forces came in, and to look into what are these people concerned for, what are these people coming from. So this is what I can just tell you.
That's Maluak Aware, a resident of Twitch State who witnessed an attack on cattle camps in his village. He was speaking with me from Twitch State this past hour. The head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body monitoring ceasefire in South Sudan, is urging the warring parties that signed the revitalized peace agreement to allow monitors to verify the size and numbers of their troops. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
Acting JEMEC Chief Augustino Njoroge says the parties agreed to form a 83,000-strong unified force composed of the military, police, national security, prisons and wildlife services. Speaking during the biannual meeting of JEMEC in Juba today, Njoroge says military representatives from the various parties agreed to utilize government assets, including engineering and medical resources, to support the cantonment process.
This will constitute elements of the military, the national and state police, the national security service, the prisons and wildlife services, and the fire brigade. It was also agreed that the government and opposition forces will contribute equal numbers to the military element of the necessary unified forces.
Njoroge praised the National Pre-Transition Committee, or NPTC, to hand over $2 million to the Joint Defense Board so that the forces can be cantoned across the country. Speaking in Arabic, Colonel Nicola Gabriel Adam, the military spokesperson for SPLA-IO forces in Western Baragazal, says the first batch of opposition forces arrived at a cantonment site in Wau last week.
We are now working on cleaning the designated area and the airstrip in Bushere. One condition says the area should be near a water source or a main road, and all these conditions are in Bushere.
Njoroge is calling on the interim transition government of national unity to release the $100 million it pledged to give the NPTC in a timely manner.
The NPTC must also ensure that the requisite resources so procured reach the implementing mechanisms consistent with their operational plans and timelines. The procurement process must be supported by a transparent and an accountable system for the disbursement of funds.
Njoroge urged the former warring parties to cooperate with JEMEC in planning for the cantonment and reunification of forces, noting both sides have refused to disclose vital information about their forces.
The reluctance on the part of South Sudanese forces to share data on exact troop numbers and locations has had a negative impact on planning, which is an essential component of the unification of all forces.
Major General Lul Rai Kwang, spokesman for South Sudan People's Defense Force, denies the government refused to provide the necessary information required by the bodies overseeing implementation of the peace deal.
I was not aware of any information that was denied to monitoring mechanism. It's specific information that was denied to them. What I was aware of was the whole process could not take off properly because of lack of funding.
SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampo Gabriel also denies his group was reluctant to share information about its forces.
We have not withdrawn or refused to give any information to RGMIC or any other monitoring body that is being tasked to monitor and implement the security arrangement or the peace agreement in general. But now that we have this extension, we also require or we request RGMIC to be able to visit our field, go to the cantonment site, visit the field and see what is happening in the field instead of making phone calls or following things from Juba.
Kwang and Gabriel both say their political leaders and military commanders will cooperate with the monitoring bodies during the extended pre-transitional period and afterward when the transitional government is formed. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the deputy chairman of the SPLM North faction says he's not going anywhere. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do as an outlet for artistic expression?
Dancing, because I'm so much in love with dancing. And actually, I can't do without it. I can't overcome dancing. It's like if I'm in a place where there's music, I just feel like I can't control myself.
I'm not good in singing or dancing, but what I like most is sports. Football, yeah, I can go for that. It's what I like most.
Like for me, I enjoy singing and other things. As I sing, it changes my mood and refreshes my mind and other things.
I choose singing because singing is my talent. And as you know, that music is food to the soul. It releases my stress, my troubles. So when I sing, I feel so good. I feel like everything is gone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
The deputy chairman of a faction of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, North, Yasir Arman, says the military junta in Sudan have asked him to leave the country. Arman returned to Khartoum on Saturday after more than 20 years in exile. He said he's back to participate in efforts to find a solution in the stalemate over who should lead the transitional government in Sudan during the next 3 years. Arman insists he is not leaving Sudan.
We came to be part of the political process after the revolution.
The leaders of the Transitional Military Council have declared you as an unwanted guest in Sudan. How do you feel about that?
That is unfortunate because I spent 32 years in the armed struggle. We need a strategic exit to the political life to transform our movement into a national democratic political movement. Unfortunately, this voice for peace and for political settlement is not being heard by the military council. We need this new development in Sudan to take us into a comprehensive peaceful settlement.
You have been out of Sudan for almost 20 plus years. How was your reception when you landed at Khartoum International Airport?
Hundreds of thousands of youths celebrated my presence. Maybe others feel threatened, but not the peoples of Sudan, who are looking for peace, democracy, social justice, and equal citizenship. Those are the people to whom I came, but the military council are asking me to go outside the country. I have no other place to go. I'm going to stay in Sudan, whatever it takes, and I'm ready to sacrifice whatsoever for our people. We have been doing that for many years.
How is your level of engagement with the new leaders in Sudan, the military leaders? Who have you met so far since you landed in Khartoum?
They refused to meet me, but I met all the opposition political leaders of Freedom and Change, the Sudan Call, the Sudan Revolutionary Front, and the National Consensus, civil societies, women, youth, name them. I interacted with all of them, and our message is very consistent that we need the peace to be part of the agenda of the revolutions, and we need the marginalized people, the IDPs, the refugees, and the prisoners of war to be released, and war should end together with the transformation and democratization of Sudan.
Tell me a little bit about how you came back to Sudan. Who invited you to come back to Sudan? It's my understanding that you took up arms to fight the government of Bashir since 2012.
No, I didn't come at their invitations. If you would remember, we announced that the SPLM is sending a delegation of goodwill on the 25th of April, last April. They refused to welcome this step. And we decided as Sudanese citizen to come through Khartoum Airport. I came and I was admitted into the country. I have no other nationalities. I'm a Sudanese. Now they're asking me to go out. I have no anywhere to go out. I'm from this soil of the Sudan, and I will stick with our people who are aspiring for democracy, equal citizenship, social justice and for their dignity to be restored after decades of the political Islam tarnishing this society.
Yasir Arman, you were sentenced to death in absentia for taking up arms against the government of President Bashir. You are back to Sudan and there's an active court case against you. Isn't that too risky?
No, I am not scared because that was a political scheme. I was sentenced to this because of the war in Blue Nile. General Bashir is the one who started the war. He removed an elected governor in Blue Nile and he kills the peoples of Nuba Mountain and Blue Nile. We are on the defense of those people. And I spent more than 32 years defending the right of the marginalized groups in Sudan. And I will continue to do that. The TMC, they now arrested Bashir and they refused to give him to the Hague. He's invited by the International Criminal Court. Why me? And this is a political sentence. There is no legal procedure. It is in absentia. And now they are asking me to go out and they are refusing even to give Bashir to the International Criminal Court. This is unfair and it shouldn't be recognized by anyone. And in any case, our people in Sudan, they are celebrating my presence and I'm going to stay among them and with them.
You landed in Khartoum on Saturday with a huge number of members of the rebel SPLM North. What are you coming to do in Khartoum?
We are part of the Alliance of Freedom and Change. And what we want to do, we want to integrate the issues of peace as part of the transition. It should not be forgotten. And we want to bring the marginalized group into the political process. And we want to advocate for a peaceful settlement. And that's why the leaders, the top leaders of the TMC, they are asking me to go out because we become a strong voice for peaceful settlement and for marginalized people of Sudan.
That's Yasir Arman, the deputy chairman of a faction of the rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North. He was speaking to me from Khartoum yesterday. As the world marks the 71st anniversary of United Nations peacekeeping, the UN mission in South Sudan is paying tribute to dozens of its peacekeepers who have been killed in the line of duty since 2011. A top UN official in South Sudan says the signing of the peace agreement is hopeful there will be lasting peace in South Sudan. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
UN peacekeepers in South Sudan today laid the wreath at the UN House in Juba for their 67 colleagues who have fallen in the line of duty in South Sudan since 2011 when the conflict erupted between government and opposition forces. That number includes the 12 peacekeepers who were killed last year. Mustafa Samore, Deputy Special Representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan, says being a peacekeeper in South Sudan carries significant risk.
All our personnel place themselves in harm's way to help all of us. Sadly, some of our colleagues have paid the ultimate price in the line of duty. Across the world, 3,842 have fallen. The families of peacekeepers in their home country share that sacrifice. We mourn the loss of 67 army staff who have fallen since 2011 and pay particular tribute to the 12 personnel who lost their lives in the past year.
Samore says South Sudan has one of the largest peacekeeping operations in the world. He says the peacekeeping mission has a 15,000-strong military force, a police force of more than 1,800 men and women, and 2,800 civilian staff working for the protection of civilians and building durable peace in South Sudan.
We protect civilians in many ways. Our military provide active patrolling to deter violence so displaced families can have the confidence to voluntarily return to their home and to ensure the safe delivery of humanitarian aid.
Samore says the UN role in South Sudan is getting more demanding as the country moves towards major democratic transformation.
Today's multidimensional peace operations are called upon not only to maintain peace and security, but also to facilitate political processes, support elections, protect and promote human rights, and restore the rule of law.
Juba resident Lodio Jumani says it is sad to hear whenever a peacekeeper or humanitarian aid worker is killed while serving humanity. Jumani praised UNMISS staff for their work in South Sudan.
It has really stood firm behind the South Sudanese who are helpless. The 90% comes sometime in areas of developmental project like construction of some roads in the areas where the government can not do more, and in educational, health, and even advocacy if it comes to time for peace.
South Sudan Deputy Defense Minister Malek Robin Riak, who represented the government at the event, says UNMISS must revisit its mandate because the peace deal is being implemented.
The government urges United Nations mission in South Sudan to refocus its programs to include developmental activities such as training and capacity building of the government officials, particularly the security and law enforcement agencies. Equally important, the basic service areas of education, health, roads, bridges required immediate support from the United Nations so that dividends of peace are felt by the normal citizen.
Robin acknowledged the atrocities that were committed by South Sudan government soldiers, including raping international aid workers at a Terrain hotel in July 2016. But he says the government is taking steps to end rights abuses and insists that the government will arraign any suspects before a military court to ensure that it abides by the treaties of the United Nations, of which it is a member state. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Fitne Ayanini by Black Bogey. Listening to Black Boogie with the song Fitina Ya Nini. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you inviting us into your vehicles and homes. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Okay.